Hello, this is Sam from the future. We recorded this show Friday night, U.S. time. That would be Friday, June 19th? No, 20th. Friday, June 20th is when we recorded this show. And, well, before I got it out, there were a few news developments. Specifically, during this show, we talked a little bit about Donald Trump's statement that he was going to wait a couple weeks potentially to figure out what to do about Iran, and how, generally speaking, he has used this two-week time frame many, many times before to avoid making decisions. Well, Saturday we actually attacked Iran. Now, one report had it that, well, there was an angry call between Trump and Netanyahu, and where Netanyahu said, we're not going to wait 2 weeks. We are going to attack ourselves if you don't do it yourself. If the U.S. doesn't do it, we will, basically. And shortly after, Donald Trump did the attack, which would sort of fit with what we also talked about on this show about, you know, he's always influenced by the last person who talks to him. However, there has also been reporting that the two-week thing this time around was completely a ruse, that the decision had already been made, that things were already underway. Given how this administration is known for truth-telling, I'm not sure I know what to believe. I mean, fundamentally, they had already reported that the plans were made. Everything was ready to go and was just waiting on a final decision from Donald Trump to basically hit the go button. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're just trying to finagle the language to make it seem like Donald Trump wasn't flip-flopping all over the place on this thing. But on the other hand, who knows? Like, all of the players involved here are not particularly known for truth-telling. Anyway, there's a discussion later on in the show, well, in the show proper, about all of the Iranian developments and about the 2 weeks that, as I just said, ended up not happening, and various other things. Now that the attack has happened, we'll see how things develop. It is still unclear, as I am recording this on Sunday evening U.S. time, on the 22nd, you know, how effective the attack was, what was actually destroyed, what was not. There's one thing the Americans are saying, there's one thing the Iranians are saying, and again, we have no actors on this stage that are known for their truth-telling. So until or unless there's independent verification of something, who the hell knows? And of course, Iran is threatening retaliation. They're saying they're closing the Straits of Hormuz. All kinds of things. And so whereas the U.S. administration seems to be saying, you know what? It's a one and done. We did this. Hopefully now there'll be peace. We shall see. Anyway, I will start the actual show we recorded in just a moment. I did have one other thing to say. For any of our listeners in the greater Seattle metropolitan area, Yvonne's going to be in town June 30th through, well, I guess he's coming in late on the 29th and leaving on the 3rd, but basically the 30th, the 1st, and the 2nd, he's going to be around. And we're talking about doing a Curmudgeon's Corner meetup. Those of you who are on the Slack regularly may already know about this because we're discussing it there. But for those of you who aren't on the Slack, if you are interested, most likely, although nothing's final yet, most likely we will do some sort of meetup the evening of Wednesday, July 2nd in Seattle somewhere. If you are interested in joining us, please go to curmudgeons-corner.com. All of the ways to contact us are listed there. Email, Facebook, Mastodon, right. But email us or whatever and let us know you're interested, and we will put you on a list and make sure to let you know exactly where and when and all of that kind of stuff once that's decided. So if you are a regular listener and in the Seattle area, let us know. We'd love to have you meet us and meet you if we haven't met you before and all of that. I guess that's it. I guess now that I've like spoken for a long time, we can start the actual show. Here we go. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It's Saturday, July 21st, 2025, just after 2 UTC as we're starting to record. I am Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne. Welcome back.
Hi.
Are you excited to be back? Did you miss me last week?
Yes. I don't even understand. What is it that you had going on? I mean, it wound up that, okay, I could only do Thursday, right? You couldn't do it.
Yeah. You could do Thursday or Saturday. I could only do Friday. So.
Right. No, I couldn't do Saturday either. But I could do Thursday, okay. But you couldn't do, right. But you couldn't do Friday. You could only do Friday.
I couldn't do Thursday. Yeah, I could only do Friday. And so we had Ed. Yeah. Ah. And that was good. Ed was here. Ed had a good time. We had a good time. It was good.
No, but what did you have on Thursday? Do you have another one of these? Do you have to show your face at some event again or something?
The family went to a movie.
Oh, okay. Which did you go see?
I'm not going to talk about this today, but we went to action How to Train Your Dragon, the live action version.
You don't have to do a review. I'm just wondering.
And we went on opening day.
Oh.
Like we were making a point of going on opening day.
You did the opening.
We did not wear costumes, though.
Ah, that's good.
Well, we probably should have. It would have been good. You know, we could have,
you gonna dress up as a dragon?
Or a Viking? Or both?
Viking.
You know?
Okay.
But no, I will save a full review for when we do that in order, but my short thumbs up, very thumbs up.
Okay.
It was... A big thumbs up for the original animated version, but also big thumbs up for the live action version. It was a good remake. But yeah, you know, speaking of movies, though, I told Ed last week, I had calculated that at the rate I am watching these things and finishing things, I will never catch up if I only mention one a week. So I have to do two. So when it gets to be my part of the but first, I will do two movies. But you know, I was going to say I'll bring back the timer for that, but I forgot to bring the timer into the room.
I have a timer here.
Well, then you can be the one to buzz me out.
Hold on.
I've got multiple timers. I just don't have them within arm's reach of where I am right now.
Right here, which is one that you sent me. It's right here.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed that particular timer, but Alex broke it.
You know, I have now, after I was with a colleague from work this week, who has been at the company only 1 year, also has a MacBook Pro. Yeah. And they explained to me how they've already broken the keyboard. And I'm like, how?
Well, as you know, I already broke my screen and had to have it fixed under Apple Care. Already, it's less than a year. It's about a year old now. It's about a year old.
I mean,
about 6 months in, I broke the screen.
So apparently, the way that they did it was, they're in sales just like me. We have a similar role. They just cover a different thing, but we have the same manager. And I guess, they're travel, whatever. I'm a neat freak, okay?
Yes, you are.
All right? That's a fact, okay? Well, neither is she, and as maybe she's not, I've been to her house. This is the crazier part of the story. Look, I went to her house because one day we were supposed to meet for dinner. My boss was in town there. We're supposed to meet for dinner.
Yes.
She's a single mom. Okay, her son was at the house. She was alone at the house. So she's going to meet us. Called her on the phone. Hey, what time are we meeting? And something didn't sound right. Honestly, she sounded delirious. Oh, okay.
That's not good.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, she sounded, something told me, and I've only met her for like 6 months, but something sounded way off, beyond the norm. Okay. Uh-huh. She lives in Puerto Rico. And I'm like, okay, are you okay? And she was incoherent. I had her home address. I said, I'm going to your house right now. I found her delirious on the bed. She really had no clue. She had been vomiting nonstop. And I'm like, you know, look, I'm, you know, much faster was me calling an ambulance, whatever, shit show. I'm like, look, here, come on. I'm taking you to the hospital. I loaded her up in the car. And so I took her to the hospital. And not sure what virus she had, but what happened is that with her fever and whatever, she got super dehydrated and was just, you know, she was just, she just wasn't, she doesn't even remember that I went and I got her out of her room and took her to the
right.
car. You had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad she had been. So I've been to her house. So she's not as messy as you, but she's not as a compulsive neat freak as I am. Okay. All right.
Okay.
That's a reality, but her place is pretty decently clean. Okay. But it's not like me. So I don't know. She, you know, she's traveling. You eat, like you buy a Starbucks or whatever, blah, blah, blah. She's working on the keyboard. She got the keyboard really dirty. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I remember. We're now back to the broken computer.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I'd forgotten what the destination of all this. Explaining was. that I know that she's, I've been to your house, I've been to her house. I know she's not as clean freak as I am, but she's cleaner than, you know, she's in the middle of us. Okay. In that range.
So she's probably right, like at normal.
Yeah. She's like at normal. Okay. She's not at me level. She's like normal, you know, yeah, she's normal, but she's normal. Okay. So she goes and tells me, well, I decided I need to clean the keyboard because it was getting kind of sticky. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So she went and she pulled out all the keys, which I do not recommend. Okay. Once again, I said, what are you doing? Look, this is not a good idea. Do not pull out the fucking keys. Okay. Just don't do that. Well, she managed to put them all back except one of the keys, which she broke.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Because, which is what usually happens with pulling apart all the fucking keys. It's just, you know, the standard thing. So anyway, so she broke the keyboard. Okay. Broke the damn keyboard. I urge people, listen, if you're going to clean the damn keyboard, okay, whatever you do, try to avoid removing the keys, okay? That always never works out well. One of them will never go back the way that it's supposed to. It's just, you know, so avoid that at all costs, okay? You know, the thing is, she's had a one-year-old MacBook. She's got a red keyboard. Mine is about to turn 4 years old. You know, it looks new. You know, I am getting a replacement this year because apparently her life cycle is 4 years. Uh-huh. So I am kind of happy about getting that because I still have an Intel MacBook Pro. And, you know, I do want to get Apple Silicon laptop, especially since they're dropping support of a lot of those now.
Uh-huh.
They're being pretty aggressive about, fuck this Intel hardware. We're not going to
keep it
supporting
forever.
Any. Yeah, we're not supporting this shit for.
Well, I'll tell you two things along your repair stories. First of all, I know the time I talked about it more extensively was when Yvonne GPT was on the show. Like the reason my screen on my laptop broke
is
I closed it with a needle in there.
A needle?
I don't know where the needle came from. I don't know. Like,
what the fuck you get a needle from? The hell? Yeah, you don't sew? How the hell you get a needle?
Well, and actually it was more like it was like the kind of straight pin. It wasn't a needle. It was like a straight pin of the kind that you pin that come like when you buy a new dress shirt and they come pinned together.
Okay. All right. So one of those dress pin. Okay. So one of those.
Now, of course, of course, it had been like actually not that long since I'd bought one of those because I bought one
because you like went to in January with a suit. Yeah. So it may have been from that somehow.
It may have been from that, but somehow it got in there. I closed the laptop with that like sitting on the keyboard or something and it hit the screen and it cracked. So that's how I broke my laptop keyboard and or not the keyboard, I screen. And luckily, AppleCare. And I will say the other thing is right before this show, I had for the day, I've been, Alex has been using my laptop while I'm away at work. He's doing various projects on it. So it had been downstairs. Well, we had taken it away and I brought it back. So I was setting it back up at my docked location and even though I'm using it docked, I did open it up and I noticed it did have crumbs inside. There was like food stuck to the screen of some sort. So yes, that this is the kind of thing that probably does not happen in your household.
Look, I will say that I'm trying to figure out how old these keyboards are. Okay, they're both very old. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, they don't really have. They're a little bit big, but these are gotta be at least 5 years old, six, actually seven. I don't think I've cleaned, and also I don't think I've cleaned them in a long time, and they're fine. You know, I mean, they could stand the cleaning, but I'm not rushing to get them cleaned at this point. Also, another thing I discovered this week, aside from the fact that, you know, a lot of people are clumsy with their computers. A very interesting factoid. For whatever reason, I was scrolling through the TV and Matlock was on TV.
Okay? The original or the new one?
The original. The original.
Okay, there because there is a new heard, one.
No, I know. And because there is the new one. And all of a sudden, I saw that the original was on TV. And I had a very long week. Okay, I must admit. I started today. I had an 8, damn it. There's nothing worse than an 8 a.m. meeting. And I had several of them this week. 8 a.m. fucking meetings. Okay. 8 a.m. meetings are the worst. Okay. All right.
Definitely.
I mean, I do get to them functional, but it takes a Herculean effort.
Herculean. Is that how you say it?
I think so. Herculean.
Yeah.
Okay. Herculean effort to be, composed for a fucking meeting to discuss the migration of a core banking application, and the necessary,
so scintillating services. Conversation.
Yeah, not exactly. Yeah, and complex, because we're talking about, how much storage capacity and services and what things and, all the different subcomponents and stuff and security and shit. So it's not, this isn't some fluffy conversation. Okay. All right. And so, damn it, I gotta be this fucking call to talk about this at 8 in the fucking morning. And, so the day at 4 o'clock, I was already kind of wiped out. I decided to just lay down and watch some TV because we were going to go out to dinner. So I go and I put on Matlock and I'm looking at Andy Griffith. Okay. Who's Matlock and,
yes,
in the series. The series was filming began in 1985 around there. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at how old is Angry E. Griffith when he is on that show. I don't know if you remember the image, and I'll send you an image of how Andy Griffith looked because I took a picture of the TV, and I am like, okay, so, I mean, I'll send you the picture on your messages. How old does that guy look to you in that picture? I just sent. I mean, what do you think?
Well, we have to index for the 80s because people.
Just whatever. I'm not. No.
If this was today, how old does that guy look
to you?
If I saw this person on the street today, right.
Yeah,
I would guess early 70s.
Early 70s, right?
But given this was the 1980s, I would guess he's younger than us.
He's not younger than us. Okay. He's not younger than us.
Late 50s.
Yes. He's 59. So I sent this picture to my brother, my two brothers, one who is already 60 and the other one who's about to turn 58 this week. And I said, guys, okay, let me tell you something. This guy here is your age. And they're both like, oh, what the fuck?
Well, this is something that people have pointed out a lot when looking at media from decades ago, is that how, you know, if you compare a given age between TV shows in the 80s and how people look today, they look older, you know?
Yeah.
And now I've seen a couple people do experiments where they basically adapted, like, they took what they look like now, but then did their hair and outfit and just styling in an 80s style, and they did instantly look older. Yeah. Now, so part of it is just the cultural association of the time, but there does seem to also just be a thing with, and this depends highly on where you are socioeconomically and all kinds of other issues, but people being healthier longer. And
well, there is a big factor that I know impacted a lot of those people in their 50s at that time. It was the smoking. Okay.
Oh, yes. That was big.
The smoking was huge, even for
non-smokers, because it was freaking everywhere.
Exactly.
You could not escape it.
You could not escape the smoking. The damn smoking. Look, I mean, smoking aged people drastically, quickly. Smoking has been shown to give people heart disease, high blood pressure, all of these damn things. And not just that, it made people's faces age. I mean, it has been shown that people that were heavy smokers compared to the other, you know, and smoke, their faces would age so much, so drastically compared to non-smokers. And that is just a factor. I have a friend of mine that I knew over here who smoked so much until his 50s. And then he quit smoking, and I saw him 3 or 4 years later after he quit smoking. He hadn't smoked for 3 or 4 years. He looked like he had lost 10 years. He looked 10 years younger. It's crazy. Right. And I do think that one of the things that was such an impact to those people at that time how much smoking happened back then.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly when the peak year was. Probably in the 70s, I would guess.
Yes, I think so.
But, like, the penetration of, like, the percentage of the population that were regular smokers was insanely high. Like, today it's unimaginable. I mean, people still smoke, and people vape, and people do other things, and people smoke things other than tobacco. Yeah, so it's still out there, by all means. But the percentage of people who don't is higher. Most people don't anymore, and when they do, it's rarer. At least within certain parts of the country, certain socioeconomic circles. Again, like if you go, this is one of those things where if you go to sort of the more blighted parts of the country, smoking rates are higher than they are in the richer parts, as is drug use, as is all kinds of things, because, you know, for all kinds of reasons, people turn to substances when other things in their lives aren't going right.
So the peak for smoking was in around the 50s, 60s, okay?
Okay.
Where it was over 40, you know, it actually spiked, I see, from the 60s into the 70s, into the mid-40s, okay? And then there was it started coming down until now it's 11%, okay?
Right.
So it's down like 80%. From where it was. But the one thing that you mentioned, you're right, because it wasn't just you smoking. If you listen, if you socialized, you went out, you only drank and you didn't smoke. You go out to a bar back then. Dude, you are going into a cigarette chamber, okay?
Yes.
I would go out in the 80s, and I remember when I went to places, I mean, everything I wore, just even when I didn't smoke, reeked of cigarettes the moment I came home every night. So, yeah, I mean, you were in a cigarette chamber. Airplanes, for God's sakes. They're smoking on the damn airplanes. Smoke on the airplanes. Smoking at the offices. Smoke. Yep. I mean, hell, on TV, I was watching some old Johnny Carson shows where
he was smoking.
Yeah. He was smoking in between, like, you know, he would go and like sneak off to the side to grab a puff from a cigarette, you know, while he was recording the show live on TV. So, yeah, I mean, he was, you know, that's how prevalent it was back then. But yeah, I have no doubt that is one of the biggest reasons why people are around 50s, yes, now look so much younger than they did back then.
Well, and like you said, even the 11% is, unless you are one of the 11%,
yeah, you're, it's not less getting visible the second half, too. Right. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, even now compared to 10 years ago, like, I remember 10 years ago when I was coming in and out of buildings at work, there'd still be like, you know, several people sitting there smoking near the entrance somewhere.
Right. Now they won't even allow them near the entrance anymore. Yeah.
Right.
You're like, so banished.
Like, yeah. So like, you know, you don't just notice the presence all the time unless you're one of the ones doing it yourself. I mean, I'm not going to say I haven't seen people smoking. I have. Within, you know, even at work, I saw someone smoking a cigarette and tossing it out before going in the building within the last week. But it's rare. It's much rarer.
Okay, but it used to be, when I worked at an office in the late 90s, early 2000s, yeah. I mean, there was I had all these managers that smoked. I would go, okay, let's go. You know, we were just a whole bunch of people outside standing, you know, smoking. I wasn't one of the smokers, but I worked with two people directly most of the time. Both of them smoked. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go outside with you to have a chit chat. I'm like, whatever. At least we're outside. I'm not inside a room like locked in, like sucking this. But yeah, but that was like a typical thing.
Right. Yeah, no, so, definitely. I think that's part of it. And like I said, though, there are other factors, too. Like somebody, like I keep going back to this experiment somebody did where they were pointing out the, like, there's a picture of like the Golden Girls or whatever with their ages next to it. Like they're all in their 50s, except one who was actually in their 40s, you know. And
Jesus Christ.
And you know, that whole show was about them being old and over the hill and like,
right,
you know, whatever. But, you know, basically this person who was the same age just dressed up like older, like, right, dressed in the style of,
right,
that they dressed in that show. And yeah, they instantly looked 10, 15 years older just from changing how they dressed and how they did their hair. You know,
well, look, I think you're absolutely right about, you know, we got the Brimley cocoon line that we've talked about, right?
Yes, yes.
I mean, you know, look, Wolfram Brimley, for whatever reason, you know, was, I mean, when he was in cocoon, how old was he? 52, I think it was. Looking up the age. Hold on. Wilford Brimley age. Oh, shit. Okay, he was 49 when he was cast. Sammy was doing, what are we doing, 50? Okay? Turning, yeah, 50 during the filming. I mean, holy shit.
Yes.
He's 49 years old. Holy shit. Man, they lived a hard life back then. Let me tell you. Yeah. Holy shit. Wow.
Yes. Anyway, shall we move on?
Yeah, you know, okay, if any of you can't notice that I'm stalling talking about potential World War III or other stuff or whatever, and, you know, chaos and whatever. It's just because I gotta be honest with you, I'm exhausted.
Well, I got two movies, and you've got the timer in front of you. How much time, okay, are you gonna give for each movie?
All right, 10 minutes.
10 minutes each?
Yeah,
or 10 minutes, 10 minutes total. Okay.
Okay, I'll give you 15 minutes total. Okay, all right.
No, no, give me, so 7.5.
I'll give you 7.5. Okay, so I'll make the 7.5. All right, and I think we're good. Yeah, time. Yeah, I hear it.
Okay, number one, which I watched on September 15th of last year, Godfather Part 3.
Ah.
Now,
Most hated one.
Except, I must say, it is hard to actually find the original Godfather Part 3 now, because they put out Godfather Coda, which was...
Oh, yeah, it was I know.
They basically re-edited it. So Godfather Coda is the one I actually saw, which was released in 2020.
Okay.
So apparently there's like three different versions. There's the original, like, theatrical release, which was when? 1990. There was a director's cut, or, quote, final director's cut from 1991. And then Godfather Coda was in 2020. And it says, the Wikipedia summary of the Coda one is, for the film's 30th anniversary, a recut titled The Godfather Coda, The Death of Michael Corleone, received a limited theatrical release, followed by digital and home releases. This version includes changes to the beginning and ending and some edited scenes and musical cues, has a runtime of 158 minutes. He has said that the 2020 recut is the one that he and Puzo originally envisioned, and that it vindicates its status in the Godfather trilogy, as well as his daughter Sophia's performance. Both Pacino and Keaton gave their approval to the new cut, noting it is an improvement over the original theatrical release. So I have not seen the originals. I've only seen the Coda version.
Uh-huh.
And I know that this, as you alluded to, people sort of hated it compared to the others. I thought it was fine. I give it a thumbs up. I liked it, you know, fine. And it was, you know, it was nominated, not the Coda version, but the original was nominated for Best Picture. You know, it was a good movie. You know,
and I thought so too. I thought that the original version, without that re-edit, I've watched both, was good too. I think that people. A lot of the shit that Coppola got was about his daughter being in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she did fine, and she's shown herself to be a very good director in her own, completely standing on her own. So she's shown herself that she's not a hack. Some people criticized Andy Garcia on the movie, which I actually thought he did a really good job in the movie. You know,
I'm not going to remember who was who, but yeah.
He is, what's his name, Corleone's nephew, the one that, you know, married, the one that wound up to marry his daughter, okay?
Yeah, you know. So just to hit it real quick before we run out of time, plot-wise, this is the last of the three Godfather movies. Apparently, they had thought about a sequel, but a Godfather 4 never happened. There was a book that came out of that. But, you know, and it basically, like with... they did some of this in the other movies too, but it's the later, older Michael Corleone, but with lots of flashbacks to the past.
Correct.
As well.
Yeah.
You know, going back to when his family was still in Italy, when they, you know, first came over to the States, etc. And this one has like a whole part of the plot about, you know, interfering with papal succession. You know,
by the way,
as well.
Which, by the way, here's the interesting thing about that part.
Yes.
Very similar to what happened recently, some of the events, okay, specifically. Specifically related to financial fraud in the Immobiliare, the company, you know, this holding that the Vatican has, where there was one person that recently the Pope wrote that he removed precisely for that, okay, before he died, okay? So I was like, whoa, what the hell? This is, you know, when I heard about that happening,
this also, just in the movie too, it's also, inspired by real events from earlier, too. There was conspiracy around the death of Pope John Paul I.
Yes.
You remember, only lasted like a month in office.
A month. Yes. And there was a conspiracy that he was murdered.
And there was a banking scandal there, too.
And there was a banking scandal, yes.
And so, yeah. So they're anyway, I liked the movie. I enjoyed it. I understand they changed a few things around. And I remember after watching it, reading a little bit about the specific changes they made. But, you know, which I guess were to try to clarify some things and to, you know, slightly change the nature of the very ending, which I won't give away. But, you know, I liked all three movies, to be honest. Like, you know, I enjoyed the whole series. Alex watched them with me. He did not enjoy them so much. But, you know, whatever. I thought they were good. I enjoyed them. They deserve their, you know, reputation as an important film series that, you know, now if I had to pick, like, you know, would three be my number one? Probably not. But I thought they were a good trilogy. It's fine as a series. Like, you know, there's some where you feel like, okay, they're just milking it. They're just milking it. Like you mentioned a few weeks ago, like Fast and Furious 27 or whatever the hell they're on now, when they're going into space and stuff. You know, but we didn't have.
They did
like,
go to. Oh, I don't. They probably did go into space, right? Yeah.
Godfather 3 did not involve anybody going to space or, you know, onto the
Ocean Gate
submersible or anything like that. You know. God. Yeah, but you know, it was enjoyable trilogy. Is my 7.5 minutes up? I'm like vamping a little bit.
You're like have a minute left.
I have a minute left. So yeah. What anything else to say? I mean, I don't know. Like I enjoyed it. It was a long time ago, so I don't remember.
Let's go to the next one. We'll save some time, and we'll go. You know, that way. Okay, so let's go to the next one. I'll give you the 7.5 minutes back. We're back here. Okay, so let's go to the next one. Okay,
the next one, watched on September 19th, 2024, just a few days later, The Princess and the Frog from 2010. It's a Disney animated thing. I'm giving it another thumbs up. I really enjoyed it. Animated, it's from 2009. It was, you know, it's set in New Orleans in the 1920s. There's a waitress who wants to someday own a restaurant. And, you know, you may guess from the title, The Princess and the Frog, she meets a frog. Who actually, in fact, was a prince who was turned into a frog by some magical spell, and adventures ensue. And it's a musical, a few songs, a few good songs. It tugs at your heartstrings at all the right times. You know, there's a scene where, you know, no spoilers, but something happens to a character, and you want to cry. It's all emotional, and you know, there's. You know, it's a Disney cartoon, so it's all the things you would expect of that. It's emotional at the right times. There's sort of adventure sequences. There's comedy. It's a fun movie. It's a just plain fun movie. It was nominated for Best Animated Feature that year. Big thumbs up. I enjoyed it. And it is one of those things that it's a family movie, not a kids movie. So, you know, that you really do have the two types. Sometimes you have movies that are really, really aimed at like younger kids of a certain age, and adults have, you know, sort of suffer through it. This is one that's good for the whole family, as most Disney movies are, you know? Mm. And yeah, like, I'm not going to have a lot. I'm not going to use the whole 7.5 minutes on this one either. Have you seen this one?
No, I haven't seen.
No, it's worth seeing. And it, you know, and like I said, it's good for adults. But like, if you have kids, kids will like the movie too. You know, it was well known. This was the first Disney princess who was black, and so at the time.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm just, Jesus. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was 2009. It was, you know, it's about freaking time. You know, Disney had been around a while by 2009, but still, this is the kind of thing that, you know, hell, even today.
You had Obama and then you had a black princess. I mean, Jesus Christ. We have MAGA.
I mean, even now, I mentioned I saw the live action How to Train Your Dragon. There was controversy because the female lead in the animated was like, you know, a blonde Viking, right? But they cast a black actress in that role for the live action remake. And so there was a lot of controversy when they first announced that casting. She was excellent, by the way. She did a great job. She inhabited the character. It went, anybody who's bitching about it, there is absolutely no reason other than racism. You know, that was like the cast, the movie came out this year, but the casting was announced like a year ago or more. And there were people complaining about it. The whole, you know, oh, they're going woke and blah, blah, blah. Oh, give me a fucking break. You know, it's and like Princess and the Frog, by the way, you know, is also like, you know, it leans into sort of New Orleans culture. And the fact that she's black is relevant to that, you know, in the 1920s and, you know, the sort of dynamics of 1920s Louisiana and such. And the movie would have a different character if she wasn't, you know? Whereas the Dragon movie, it really didn't make any difference. But there were all kinds of people going, you can't do that. Vikings were white. And, you know, the straight up answer to that in a movie like How to Train Your Dragon is, you know what else?
About a movie with a fucking dragon.
Exactly. Vikings didn't ride dragons either.
Yeah. Jesus fucking Christ, you idiots. God okay. Almighty.
Yeah. So.
Oh, anyway. We need the historical accuracy for a movie that involves a fucking dragon.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
I'm checking my list. So we got 2 minutes on this. I'm checking my list of Fast and the Furious movies. Okay.
You did talk about this only a few weeks ago, but go ahead. Yes.
But no, I'm looking through the list. Okay. By the way, they didn't go to space. Okay. Let me correct that. I exaggerated a little bit about that. They did go to Japan. One thing I can see.
Well, that's space, isn't it?
I mean, kind of. I mean, if you've been to Tokyo, it looks like you are in outer space, you know? So it's very modern. So let's see. So the first one was called...
James Bond went to space decades ago.
James Bond was to space multiple times. Okay, Moonraker, okay? You know, where they did the whole thing where apparently you could launch a shuttle attached to the 747, which is completely, you know, had a lot of holes in the plot. But still...
Anyway, Fast and Furious did not go to
space. The first one was the Fast and the Furious.
Right,
okay,
right.
All right. Yes. Okay, the. It's important.
The, yes.
Because the second one was Too Fast and Too Furious. Then you had the Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. And then you had Fast and Furious, not the Fast and Furious.
Oh, right. Yes.
And this is why I made sure to mention that there was a the Fast and Furious, and then there was a Fast and Furious, okay? No the, okay? Very important. Then you went into Fast 5. Then you went into Fast and Furious 6. Then you went into Furious 7. Get rid of the Fast, okay? Timer went off. There you go, okay? So, the Fate of the Furious, not faster anymore. Then we simplified it to F9. Sounds like a jet fighter craft at this point. And then you went to Fast X, which sounds like an iPhone.
And there was a spinoff called Hobbs and Shaw.
Shaw, yes. And they've got a plan for Fast X Part 2.
Part 2, yes.
Okay. And then you've got another one that they think Fast and the Furious presents Hobbs and Reyes. not Hobbs and Shaw. Not sure who Reyes is. And then the other ones have no name. But they have two more. One that says Untitled Standalone Film, Untitled Female-Led Spinoff. I mean, I'm never...
And as I scroll down the Wikipedia page, there are two short films as well.
They're short films, yes. The Turbocharged
and a TV show.
And
Fast and Furious Spy Racers on Netflix.
And it adds six seasons.
Yes.
I mean, I got to say, let me tell you something. I got to give good credit to Vin Diesel for milking the shit out of a mediocre movie and making it a gravy train that, by the way, I'll give credit to Vin Diesel for being a stand-up guy, because when Paul Walker died, he basically still kept taking care of his daughter, gave him money, walking down the aisle. So you know, knowing that his death, he actually took care of, one of his co-stars. So I'll give him credit for that. But this guy milked. I mean, this is 30 years of milking, this. I mean, this makes like Tom Cruise with the Mission Impossible movies seem like just, he's a rookie. I mean, this is serious milking here. Okay.
And by the way, the TV series is animated.
Oh, the TV series is animated. Oh, there you go.
But apparently,
and there are rides, and there's also, listen, there's also a very shitty ride, okay, which I went on when I went to Los Angeles a couple of years ago. They have a ride at Universal Studios, okay, as well, which I thought was ridiculously stupid, okay, but I got on it. It's there, so they've got a ride at the Universal Studios Hollywood. I think they also have the same one in Florida.
Oh, I have to correct myself, though. I started to say that the animated series has a lot of the same voices. No, it only has Vin Diesel and some cameos. Otherwise, not. So,
yeah. Oh, well. So the ride is called Fast and Furious Supercharged.
Okay.
I mean,
shall we go ahead and take a break and then get to World War III and everything else that we need to talk about?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Here comes a break, and then we will talk about the more serious things going on in the world. And actually, there's too many serious things going on in the world. Oh, we probably won't get to all of them. But
no.
Here we go.
No, it's not the beginning of the show again. We're just taking a little time to credit the artist responsible for the music we use at the beginning and end of the show. What you are listening to right now is The O of Pleasure by Ray Lynch. The music we close our show with is Celestial Soda Pop. Both of these songs are from Deep Breakfast. Now platinum, Deep Breakfast was the first independently released album ever to be certified gold by the RIAA. Ray Lynch's other albums are The Sky of Mind, No Blue Thing, Nothing Above My Shoulders But the Evening, and The Best of Ray Lynch. You can check out Ray Lynch or buy his music at raylynch.com, iTunes, Amazon, or anywhere you usually find music.
Okay, so we're back. Now, I mentioned there's a lot going on, and we'll only talk about some of them. So let me list the list real quick, because some of these don't even feel like they were still this week.
Ugh.
We had the Minnesota lawmaker shootings. The state reps that
Jesus
were
Christ, that was still this week.
Yeah, that happened last Saturday, which was after Ed and I recorded the last show. We had the No Kings rallies. We had Trump's parade. We had the New York comptroller, who's also running for mayor, arrested trying to do some, on immigration stuff. We, of course, have Iran that I'm sure we're going to talk about. We had the Supreme Court make a significant decision on trans rights. And the other things sort of fall into that category.
Wait, what was the decision on trans rights? I don't remember this one now. Which one?
The Supreme Court let stand states who have outlawed the gender-affirming surgery for
minors. Right. Yeah.
So, and that affects approximately half the country. And so, you know, basically, if you're a trans kid in those states, you're out of luck right now. Unless your parents are wealthy enough to, you know, take you to a different state for your treatments. So that went on. I will say on the No Kings thing, I'd mentioned last week, both Ed and I talked about how we intended to go to these things. I did go, and I will say it was good. Like, I went in Everett, Washington, and, you know, Ed and I talked about, like, one of the reasons for things like this is not necessarily that you expect, oh my God, Donald Trump will see all these rallies and change things. And no, that's not it. But it's when you go to them, the sense of, you know, no, you're not alone. A
right.
lot of people also
right.
feel this way. A lot yeah. of people are upset by this.
Yeah.
And to sort of get that validation and to feel like, you know, especially right now when, you know, all of the institutions are going the other direction, you know, the presidency, the court, the Congress, et cetera. And we have things like the Supreme Court decision, you know, being in a place where you are surrounded by like-minded people who are being loud and vocal, and you can see that there are actually a lot of them nationwide. I think the estimates ended up at 5 or 6 million people nationwide participated in these things. I saw some
basically
estimates
as many people that went to the parade in Washington, right?
Just a tad more. But yeah I've seen some estimates that were even higher, but the most credible estimates were 5 to 6 million. And, you know, like when I was in Everett, Washington, you know, there were big crowds. There was a little rally. And then there was like a couple hours of sign waving along one of the main drags through town. And the thing that got me the most and honestly had me like tearing up at certain points were that, you know, almost the entire time where people were sign waving, the road was still open. This wasn't a parade. This was just people lining the sidewalks with their signs. So there was still traffic going down the street. And there was almost nonstop the entire time, people honking in support and waving out their windows as they drove by. Whereas, like, I've been to sign wavings before for, like, candidates, like, both mm-hmm. for my wife and for other local candidates, where, you know, you're just sitting on a corner waving the sign for your candidate or whatever. And, yeah, you get some supporting honks, but you also get people. Well, no, you get a few, but you also get people giving you the finger and yelling out the window.
Yeah.
There was none of that going on. And maybe they were just intimidated by the large crowd. And exactly. Good. You know,
I want to go back to the time where fucking racist people were intimidated into not being racist.
Yeah.
Can we go back to that time? You remember the good old days?
Oh, yeah.
When they were scared
yeah.
of being fucking racist?
Oh, yeah. But, like, no, it was just very heartening to, like, you know, we spent probably an hour walking down the street because there was, like a mile where people were lining the streets, and we walked down one side and up the other. And, you know, during that time, you know, I mean, just all the energy that was there was just very heartening and invigorating. And, you know, it's like, yeah, let's go. And I've seen some things afterwards, you know, and we've criticized, like, you know, Democratic leadership before for not having this kind of energy. And there were a lot of Democratic leaders who sort of stayed away from these things and, you know, with notable exceptions, the usual notable exceptions. But it's like, come on, folks, harness this energy. Like, let's go. Let's show some vigor, show some fight. And because there are clearly lots of people that are just ready for that and want an outlet for all this energy and want leaders that also show the same kind of energy as opposed to sort of just what we're getting. Yeah. So again, with notable exceptions. Okay. That was all I had to say. The other things that I listed that were not particularly newsy, I've mentioned on the show, my little Tempest game machine that has been in a box for years. My son Alex arranged for me to get it for Christmas like 3 years ago or something. I opened the box once, saw it looked complicated to put together, put it back in the box. And ever since then, I've been begging my family every birthday, every Christmas, every Father's Day, can you please put this together for me? Because it stressed me out when I even looked at it.
Yeah, you would be no good at assembly. I assembled it, and you would not be the right person to do it.
I have assembled other things, and I hate assembling things, and it stresses me out even when it's simple. I opened this box, and it didn't look simple.
This
and
is I not was like, simple.
I was like, screw that, I'm not doing it. So Alex and my wife, Brandy, together put this thing together for this assembled it for this Father's Day. I've been playing it. It comes with 12 games. I've now played 11 of them. I've said nobody else is allowed to play it until I play the first game on each one of the games. I've got one more to do, but I've been enjoying it. I've been playing every day.
Like I like ours. We don't have the Tempest one. I got the Miss Pac-Man one. It's got about a dozen games. No, we got Galaga.
I must say the reason
Dig Dug.
The reason Alex got this for me is I had said before, from that era of games, Tempest was my favorite game. I have played the others on this console. It's got like Centipede and Millipede and those are and like Missile Command and a few other things like that.
Missile Command. Yes.
And you know, those are fun. Those are okay. But I must say Tempest is my go-to. And like I've played Tempest clones elsewhere, but this has the proper spinny wheel control, and like it's not the same game if you're trying to do it with an Xbox controller or something.
Yeah,
you know, it's just not. Yeah. You know, so I am enjoying the spinning wheel. I'm enjoying the game. So Alex wants me to mention that he has been coding up a Tempest clone for the iPad using, what's this program called? Codea? Codea. He's been using that to program a Tempest clone that every time he shows it to me, he's added more of the original game into it. So it's got the sort of spinning around and shooting things, and he's now got it so you can finish a level and, you know, several of the things. If you don't know what the Tempest game is, this won't mean anything to you. But, he's every time he hands it to me, it's got more features. Except the one thing that I still have not gotten used to, obviously an iPad does not have a little controller to spin. He's set it up so the controls are actually spinning the iPad. And I can't quite get used to those controls. But I have managed to finish the level that he's set up. So anyway, okay, that was everything else is what, Iran? Are we just going to go to Iran now? Or are we going to spend the rest of the time talking about Trump's
No, brain? Let's go to Iran. Iran.
So we did, Ed and I did talk about Iran a little bit. Because it had started last time. Israel had attacked. Iran had started to retaliate. when we recorded last week's show, but obviously it's continued this whole time. And I guess the big additional thing is Donald Trump has been contemplating whether or not to let the U.S. get involved in helping take out the underground portions of the nuclear capability.
Nuclear.
Yes, sorry. I keep wanting to say Frodo for where this is. It's not Frodo because of the Lord of the Rings. It's Fordor. What is it? Fordor, the Iranian base where they're doing enrichment or whatever.
Something like that. Who cares?
You know, but I keep wanting to call it Frodo.
Something.
And it's not Fodors either. That's a travel guide.
That's a travel guide. Yes, that's correct. Fodor. Yes.
Fordo. F-O-R-D-O-W is the actual thing. Not Frodo.
Not Fredo.
It's the Fordo fuel enrichment.
Given that you did the Godfather, Fredo.
Oh, Fredo. Yes, Fredo.
Yes. It's not Fredo.
Or Alfredo.
Or fettuccine Alfredo, yes.
Exactly. Now you're making me hungry. Okay, we're still avoiding the topic. So
look, okay, but now it seems that Trump's chickened out.
Yes, it does appear. Like, here's the thing. He went from, when this whole thing started, the U.S. position stated by all kinds of administration people was this is entirely between Israel and Iran. We have nothing to do with it. We're not going to be involved. We were pushing for Israel not to do this because we were pushing the peace talks. We wanted the New Deal in place, et cetera, et cetera. Then it sort of, there was a leak that said, well, actually, Donald Trump has said publicly that he was pushing for the deal, but actually he didn't say no to the Israelis and he actually gave the green light. And then there was reporting that what was actually happening is Trump really liked the coverage on Fox of what Israel was doing. And so he wanted to take some credit for it. And so
God, which makes sense. Yeah.
And so then, you know, there was still sort of, then there was this talk about how, well, Israel's not going to be able to get all of the capabilities because they don't have the right kind of bunker buster bombs. And so, you know, they really are going to need the U.S. And Netanyahu's trying to get Trump to get involved. And so there was a lot of Donald Trump saying, well, we might get involved. And, hey, we might kill Khamenei, too.
Might even use a tactical nuke.
And we might use a tactical nuke. Now, Trump didn't say that. There was somebody else said that. But, like, you know, it's been implied that nothing is off the table. And so there was a ramp up of the hawkish rhetoric coming from Trump and those surrounding him for a few days. And then it became clear that there was a significant schism in Trump land between the isolationist wing who really bought into Trump is the peace president and and doesn't want war and wants to keep away from all of this stuff. And the whole point is, you know, America first, forget about all these international entanglements. In fact, Bannon specifically was on TV saying, you don't want to let this Iran thing distract from deporting all the illegals, because if you don't deport all the illegals, you've lost the country. And so apparently,
let me get this straight. Okay.
Yes.
So my choices are, okay, it seems, fucking send a fleet of B-2 Spirits with these bunker buster bombs over there in order to, you know, maybe fail at this and maybe stop the Iranians, maybe not, maybe trigger World War III. Or my door number two is this ridiculous mass cruelty event that we're living with right now. With the deportation? Is that, are those my doors at this moment?
Well, there are other people that say, why don't you have both? But I'll also say you also had the faction of the Republicans who are more aligned with the neocons who, you know, and like, what's his name?
Bomb him.
Lindsey Graham was one of these.
Well, Fetterman was like bomb Israel.
Fetterman, yeah, absolutely, on the Democratic side. There are a whole bunch saying, yeah, absolutely, we have to take out the Iranians, whatever we do. Now let's take our chance. Let's do this. We've been wanting to do this for a decade. You know, and so it seems like at the moment we are recording, and this could change in the next hour, the last person to talk to Donald Trump was indeed Bannon. And so the current thing that came out immediately after Donald Trump had Bannon over to the White House was, okay, we'll give it 2 weeks. We'll give the Iranians 2 weeks to maybe come to the table and do the peace deal after all. Now, a couple things on this. First of all,
Trump was also talking about the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes, yes, we'll hit that in a second.
That's not unimportant, okay? Here is the thing about this.
Okay,
Remember that Obama got one. And there is this entire Obama, you know, thing that kills him, okay?
Yeah. Ed and I talked about this last week. Trump clearly in multiple areas today he like truth socialed something where he almost explicitly said it, but he was hoping for the fix the Ukraine situation in 24 hours and get the Nobel Peace Prize for that. Failing that, he wanted to get a Nobel Peace Prize for solving Gaza by, you know, building the Gazan Riviera and kicking out all the people. Now he was hoping to get a Nobel Peace Prize by, you know, bringing back the Iranian deal that he killed 8 years ago. You know, and he's also saying he deserves it for solving the India-Pakistan situation. Oh, and by the way, just a few hours ago, showing that they know how to suck up, the Pakistanis nominated him for a Nobel Peace Prize for the for the India-Pakistan situation. Now,
look, but it's very clear that Bannon went in there and his listen, because you had the Netanyahu manipulation using Fox News with going and, you know, doing the bombing and saying, hey, they're a threat. And they were kind of like brainwashing him nonstop with Fox just being all warmongery. So you had him almost on the point of like him pulling the trigger.
He was ready to push the damn button to drop a nuke on Tehran.
Yeah, exactly. He had him all the way there. Then Bannon goes in, and because, you know, like everything happens, like with the whole immigration thing the other week when he's flip-flopped already, you know, where Bannon goes in and he said, no, whatever, you want that Nobel Peace Prize, we can't do this. And then all of a sudden, now we're off the table. We're going for peace. 2 weeks.
Here's the thing. Well, the 2 weeks thing, and a number of people have pointed this out, and some people have made video compilations of this. Ugh. But we'll decide this in 2 weeks is a standard go-to thing that Donald Trump does. People have pulled video compilations. Apparently, he's done it a few dozen times already since January in his second term.
Infrastructure week!
And people pulled it from his first term as well. Not just infrastructure week, but basically whenever there was a decision to be made that was somewhat hard, his go-to is, we'll make a decision on this in 2 weeks. And he hopes that 2 weeks later, everyone's forgotten, because he never comes back and actually makes the decision 2 weeks later.
Oh my God.
Is not actually, we'll give it 2 weeks and 2 weeks later, we'll make a decision.
The play is, in 2 weeks, I will have created some other crisis in some other fucking way that will make you forget about that one 2 weeks ago.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, yes.
Very, very plausible.
Totally.
And also in this scenario, he may be like, hey, hell, 2 weeks from now, there's no indication the Israelis are waiting. the Israelis have put out a bunch of statements today that says all this reporting that we can't do it ourselves is bullshit. We've got ways to do it.
Look, it is the Israelis know it is far more difficult for them to do it without our help. Okay.
Well, and one of the statements about using a tactical nuke did come from the Israeli side, by the way, that there is not an official statement, but you know,
listen, I got to tell you something. The Israelis have to be out of their fucking mind to try to use a nuke.
It is.
It doesn't matter. Okay. Look, listen, let's be clear. Why is Bibi doing this, Sam?
Oh, could it possibly be because his trial's not going well?
And his coalition is so fragile. How do you keep that coalition together?
Well, and this is, you know, Ed and I talked about this about Iran last week, but it applies to Israel too.
Yeah.
The one thing that is consistent, you know, worldwide all the time, you can point to examples here in the U.S., it doesn't always last forever. But if you want a boost in your approval ratings, war.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like hell, yeah. They made Wag the Dog about this, right? Like,
yes.
If you have domestic issues and you want a boost and you want to make people forget about the domestic issues.
War.
War.
War against a known enemy.
It's like the
Argentinians. Listen, the Argentinians in the Falklands, for example. Look, I mean, that was a sore spot for them. The British, you know, were hated over the Falklands were theirs. That military government was in crisis. Fuck, let's take the Falklands. The hell with it. And their popularity soared. Okay, immediately.
Well, yeah. I mean, the context Ed and I talked about this last week was the Israelis talking about, hey, maybe because of this, the Iranian regime is really fragile and they'll fall. And I was like, no, come on. The one thing that rallies people behind the flag is being attacked. You know, even more than going.
There is a certain
tipping point where if it gets bad enough, it goes the other direction. But here's the thing.
The Iranian regime is vastly unpopular. I had shared an article from The Economist that was talking about this.
They're more popular now than they were 2 weeks ago.
But not that much is what I'm looking at in there. Okay. There were actually quite a lot of people. You know, there was an article that I shared from The Economist. The Arab War thinks differently about this Iran war. A new spectator sport with scary consequences, in which a lot of the people that normally were like Iranian, like, you know, cheerleaders were just like, fuck the Iranians. You know, what the hell? They're assholes anyway. They've been fucking with us for so long. The hell with them. You know, there wasn't the kind of reaction that you would expect outpouring of mass support for the Iranians. Okay. Did it maybe improve internally somewhat? Sure. But they definitely didn't get some, you know, it's not like when you know, Russia attack Ukraine, right?
Mm-hmm.
The unilaterally, everybody was on the Ukrainian side. The Israelis attacked Iran, and even their neighbors and whatever, they were like, they're supposed to allies. They were like,
Well, I am talking mainly internally in the statement I made.
But even,
just like,
no, but it, even there was talk about internally. Look, there was quite a lot of angst against the Iranian regime right now. A lot of people were talking, you know, the things internally that we're talking about was, how stupid are our leaders that they got caught like that and they got killed like that, that they were so cavalier that even though there were messages about the threats, what they decided to do is they're bullshit and they got killed.
And specifically, like, even those that thought they would probably be an attack, thought that the Israelis would hold off until the next scheduled meeting with the Americans.
Right. Yeah.
Like, and probably, I would imagine, you know, Donald Trump probably thought so too.
Yeah.
You know, he was played by Bibi on this one. He was used as the bait to make sure the Iranians were caught by surprise, because they thought they were right in the midst of negotiations with the Americans and there was no way the Israelis would attack while that was going on. Wrong.
Yep.
You know, but yeah. So anyway, it looks like Donald Trump has done his, we'll tell you in 2 weeks, and he's really hoping this goes away. And, you know, let's hope he's right. I don't know. Like, I saw a chart of the number of attacks in both directions over the last couple weeks, and it is less than it was at the beginning. Like, there was a big spike at the beginning in both directions, and it is slowing down. But well, look, it's not over. In either direction.
Listen, this is very costly for the Israelis, like right now. I just saw that just the defense, just how much in munitions for daily defense it costed when the Iranians were launching was about $250 million a day. I mean,
well, and there's also a question of how many of these defensive missiles they even have. Like, you know, there were reports that, you know, although the quality isn't that great, just in terms of sheer numbers, Iran has more offensive missiles than Israel has defensive missiles.
So they think. Because that's been the speculation. Because also, by the way, you know, the Iranians, all of a sudden, the number of missiles they were launching was also going down pretty quickly as well. So
And for two reasons. One, you know, well, one is just straight up Israel is destroying a lot of them on the ground.
Exactly.
I mean, a bunch of what Israel is doing is attacking known Iranian missile bases.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that Israel has said is, yes, we're after the nuclear capabilities, but we're also after the missile capabilities, conventional.
Right.
You know, because that, and if you remember, that was one of the main there were many criticisms, but one of the big criticisms the Israelis and the neocon conservatives in America had against the Iran deal, that the Obama-Iran deal, was that it only talked about the nuclear development platform and not all the other things Iran was doing with their missile capabilities and their interference with various other countries around the region. And Obama's response was, look, one thing at a time. We're dealing with the nukes.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Bibi and others were basically saying, if you don't solve everything, we're not interested at all.
Ah, the perfect solution. Otherwise, no solution. Yes.
And also, always
a way to solve all problems is to always look for the perfect solution.
And the other thing that all of these folks said was a problem was the Obama deal had a lifespan. It was, you won't do these things for X number of years, and said nothing about the time period after that. And they were basically saying the fact that it's not forever makes it unacceptable. Whereas, again, the Obama position was, hey, if we've got a 10-year moratorium, it gives us 10 years to work on the deal for what happens after that. And it gives us 10 years to work on improving the relationship of Iran with the rest of the world to diminish the problem anyway. Of course, that didn't play out because Donald Trump, you know, got rid of the deal. And I've also seen all kinds of charts in the last week of, you know, the amount of nuclear, of refined uranium that Iran had, or the number of centrifuges, all various metrics here that show it go up, 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 up. Then the deal happens, and it goes to zero. And it's flat. And if you remember, this was verified internationally going to
zero. Yeah, I know.
All kinds of inspectors and blah, blah, blah. And then there's another vertical line that says, oh, and at this point, this is when Trump pulled out. And all those lines start going back up again. There's like a 3-month delay. And then it all starts going back up again and exceeds where they were in the Obama administration after about.
Well, I wish his father had pulled out at some point, but that didn't happen. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So one other thing just before I forget, when we were talking about the factions of Republicans, including the ones who are upset about Donald Trump potentially liking war and not being all peacenik, my daughter was apparently hearing from the other room and texted me, all the Trump stands crying over this war effort are goofy losers.
Okay, let's be clear. All the Trump stands, period, about anything, are goofy losers. All right, let's be clear.
Yeah, so let's get back to the Wald's weird thing that should never have been abandoned.
That should never have been abandoned. You know, but there was this
You can go first.
No, because it's about this subject specifically.
Okay.
You know, talking about why, you know, somebody, it's Substack, Charlie Sykes wrote, why is this happening with Trump? Okay. And these were the bullet points, okay, about this. You need to understand this. This is what we need to understand about that fetid stew of Trump's cognitive, you know, dissonance. Trump loves the dress-up part of being generalissimo, but he is not a warrior president. He revels in the trappings and parade of power, but if he wages war, he wants to be here in America, not abroad. Crazy. That's what he's doing. He would love day one of the war, not so much the days after. He wants the show, but not the mess. Donald Trump very much wants to be the strong man who drops the big bunker bomb on Iran's nuclear program, but he also very much wants to win a Nobel Prize because he really does fancy himself as a peacemaker. Don't ask. He put in parentheses why that is. Trump, another bullet point, Trump enjoys the attention he's getting now and craves being in control. But the fallout from war is uncontrollable. There are $40,000 American troops in harm's way. Iran could blockade the Strait of Hormuz. And finally, the guy who blusters all caps threats, unconditional surrender, really does always chicken out.
Yes, because he doesn't want to do anything that in the end is risky to him. There was another clip, and this was from BBC Newsnight, that I saw shared on social media with an analyst talking about this. And this, I said it was spot on, nails it. Because basically she said, look, the thing you got to remember is that Trump does not think strategically at all.
Nothing.
This is
nothing.
He does not think about what's good. What's
for
good
America.
For America.
What's good for the world.
For Israel. No, for Iran.
No.
For any.
It no.
Is all,
God.
It is,
fuck
it
no.
Is all about how does he personally come out looking like a winner?
Yep.
That's it.
That's
it.
There is no other fucking consideration in this guy's mind.
Exactly. And so, like, this flip-flopping you're seeing, like, this is exactly, like, at first, he was like, hey, I'm going to come out a winner because I'm going to come up with a new Iran deal. And then he sees Israel kicking ass, blowing up things in Iran and getting positive coverage on Fox News.
I want credit for that.
Exactly. And then he gets Bannon talking to him and saying, oh, no, that would be a huge mess. You want to keep out of this. You want to make sure you have your success elsewhere. And so he pivots again.
You want to get your Nobel Peace Prize.
And it's all about what does he make him look good. Now, I've also seen people point out, because it was both him and it was Tucker Carlson and Bannon.
Oh, my God. No, both of them.
Well,
yeah,
Tucker Carlson was talking to Ted Cruz
Tucker Carlson humiliated Ted, which is, I guess, is not that hard if you get one-on-one.
Look, he was asking questions about, like, what's the population of Iran and such, and I wouldn't have known off the top of my head either. You know,
his point was that he had been making detailed recommendations without knowing shit about the subject.
Yes, yes. The fundamental point was Ted Cruz has been going on about wanting to attack Iran and we needing to be part of this and how this is necessary. But then when you ask him questions that delve anything beyond the superficial of the situation, he has no freaking idea.
Exactly.
And so And then you may look, this is one of those scenarios where, okay, they're fighting themselves. This is like when we were talking about Elon a few weeks ago, right? You know, yes, it's fun to watch them fight amongst themselves, but you don't have to align yourself with them. You know,
no!
it's like, okay, I am glad that Bannon is in there trying to talk Donald Trump out of getting involved in a war. But
yes. That doesn't
Bannon's
make him
reasons
are awful.
It has nothing to do with what would be my reasons for keeping out of a war in Iran.
Right. Right.
Of which there are many.
There are many good ones, yes.
But Bannon's reason, you don't want to be distracted from causing great pain and suffering amongst the immigrant population in the country.
By the way, the immigrant population in the blue states in the country, which is what I'm realizing now, by the way. I realize now.
He's hitting some red states too, but yeah, it's mainly.
Barely, Sam. This is all show, and he's really targeting, like, New York and California.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see this shit coming out barely out of Texas.
Or where you are in Florida.
Or Florida! This is, I mean, and there was, like, recently, I can't remember when he said this, that we need to exert the maximum pain on those states specifically.
They're open about it. They're open.
Yeah.
It's not even hidden in any way.
Right.
I suspect, you know, I suspect this plenty happening in red states too, actually, but where they want the emphasis is the blue.
There is some happening, but it's nowhere near what they're doing in California and New York.
My point is just that, you know, it is really weird to be in a situation where you're like, go, Bannon, go.
I know. I'm like, fuck.
Or like, oh, hell, Tucker man. Carlson, you know, go Tucker Carlson.
Humiliated Ted Cruz. I'm like, yeah, I'm all in for humiliating Ted Cruz. I mean, you know, that's always a fun day. You know, I mean, making him look like the complete fucking idiot loser he is. Yes, I'm all in.
Yes,
but Tucker Carlson is a hateful, spiteful little man as well. So,
as is Bannon,
as is Bannon,
all the, yeah, a bunch of these other folks,
as is Miller, and, as is, you know. Hey, how's Tulsi feeling today, by the way?
Oh, yeah, we hadn't even mentioned Tulsi.
How's she doing? You think she's feeling good today?
It's not her best week.
No.
So, you want to say what happened to Tulsi, or shall I?
I mean, okay, so...
This is actually important to the scenario, too.
The main thing today, Trump was angry earlier this month. I'll read it. This is from New York Times article. It talks specifically about this, called Trump's rebuke of Gabbard signals an uneasy moment. Earlier this month, Tulsi Gabbard, his director of national intelligence, had posted a 3.5-minute video social media describing her visit to Hiroshima and outlining the horrors caused by the detonation of a nuclear weapon there 80 years ago. Speaking directly to the camera, Ms. Gabbard warned that the threat of nuclear war remained as we stand here today, closer to the brink of nuclear annihilation than ever before. She said political elites and warmongers are carelessly fomenting fear and tension between nuclear powers. Mr. Trump berated Ms. Gabbard for the video, according to two people briefed on the conversation. She had said that her discussion of nuclear annihilation would scare people, and that officials should not talk about it. So that was the first thing, okay? And then Trump was asked publicly about, you know, the military strike on Iran. Ms. Gabbard, a critic of overseas entanglements, has privately raised concerns of a wider war. And on Friday, Mr. Trump said she's wrong when he was asked about her testimony in March that Iran had not decided to build a nuclear weapon. Just went
let me hit that part, because I think that's actually very important, because this is not just Tulsi. Like, Tulsi is representing the actual intelligence conclusion of the U.S. government that has been consistent for a number of years.
That they're not building a nuke.
Which is that while the capacity that the Iranians have for uranium enrichment is concerning because, in theory, it means if the Iranians made the decision to actually build a weapon, it gets them closer to that point. But the actual situation, going back to all the way to, I believe, 2003, is that the leadership in Iran, the religious leadership in Iran, had put a stop to actual nuclear weapon research and had put out all kinds of statements about how nuclear weapons were immoral and should not be used in war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and basically killed any actual development of weapons way back in 2003, like over 20 years ago. And the U.S. intelligence consensus is that that has not changed. The sort of official, like, sense of what's going on is, yes, the Iranians have a civilian capacity. Yes, that civilian capacity could potentially be converted to dual use and made into a weapons capacity. And yes, there is concern about how short that time period is. Like, do you let the, you know, if you fully develop what the Iranians are doing, you potentially get into a situation where converting it into a weapons capacity is a very short timeline. Now, you hear, like, some people on the, you know, on the hawkish side say that time period is in weeks. Mm-hmm. But what I've heard from more neutral experts is more likely we're talking 6 months to a year if the Iranians actually decided, yes, we absolutely do want a weapon, let's go. And so there is reason for concern potentially. However, the American intelligence consensus is the Iranians have never actually made that shift and said, yes, we are building a weapon and we want to build a weapon, or that it's moral to do so. Right now, there is a religious dicta saying that that would be fundamentally wrong and that the country should not do that. And that doesn't mean they couldn't change their mind or the next leader could have a different opinion. But it does mean that when you, and obviously, like, well, I shouldn't say obviously, the take is Israeli intelligence has come to a different conclusion. Right. But you have to wonder, do they really know something more, or are they just, for good reason, wanting to index to being more paranoid about the situation?
Right.
Because the consequences are much greater for them in short term if Iran does decide to do this. And apparently this is a situation where, as recently as March, like you said, Tulsi was in front of congressional committees stating that this was the conclusion of American intelligence. And we have Donald Trump openly on the White House lawn answering a question saying, well, if that's what they think, they're just full of it. They're just wrong. They're just wrong. Not because he knows something specific otherwise. It's just it's not convenient for him. Right. And this just reminds you of the situation going up to the first Iraq war, where, you know, the intelligence community was essentially stifled and was only allowed to bring to the president information that led to the conclusion that, yes, of course the Iraqis are building weapons of mass destruction and we need an invasion. All of the counter evidence was stifled and held internally, and people were told, no, 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 that's not wanted. We're not going to go there. There was plenty of that. There was plenty of intelligence indicating that it was bullshit.
An actual but guy they didn't want that hear, people made fun of, Hans Blix, who was an inspector that went around and basically had done all these inspections and showed that they weren't doing this. And the U.S. government chose to ignore that information.
And this is the similarity I'm pointing out. It's just like Donald, and we know this about him in general. Donald Trump has no real concern for what is actually true or not.
Yeah,
what are facts?
No, facts.
It's what's convenient for his situation. Again, what will make him seem like a winner? And
oh, by the way, as this was all happening, he called the Fed Chairman Powell a complete moron?
Well, yes, of course. And he said he's going to appoint his successor soon, even though he's got like a year left on his term or whatever.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, it's all about positioning himself to look like a winner. It is not about what's actually happening on the ground. And I'll point out, by the way, also, as usual with Israeli preemptive wars, or for that matter, preemptive wars in general, it holds true for the Iraq war we were just talking about, too. You know, if you look at casualties and fatalities in this back and forth between Israel and Iran, Israel's killed a lot more people than Iran has. Just like Israel's killed a lot more people in Gaza than Hamas succeeded in killing Israelis, you know? And so obviously there are other factors at play that you have to consider, but if you just weigh things in terms of who's killed the more people, the most people, it's not even close.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, gosh. Any other happy, fun stuff?
Happy, fun stuff. We, the lawmaker shootings? Is that happy and fun? I'll just say on this, having a wife who's a state legislator, this stuff hits home. And I've heard through the grapevine, nothing I could quote directly, but there are considerations being worked up in terms of, does security have to be increased for other lawmakers, you know, here in Washington and across the country after this? And, you know, my wife this very moment, she was attending a conference in Seattle of women lawmakers from across the country. And, you know, this was a topic of conversation. You know,
When I lived in Puerto Rico, when I was young, there were still residual effects of a significant amount of violence against elected officials in Puerto Rico, assassination attempts and other things, which meant that many elected officials in Puerto Rico at much, you know, unlike in the States, that at the governor level, the aides to the governor, et cetera, many of those had police. They had assigned security details because of how, I mean, these attacks were, I mean, there was a siege in Old San Juan that happened in the 50s, okay, by terrorists seeking to assassinate the governor. It was this bad, taking lawmakers hostage, you know, all of this. We had bombings regularly of post office. Hell, there was even an attack on an Air Force base in Puerto Rico that destroyed a whole bunch of F-4 Phantoms on a tarmac. So we had that level of local violence. And I happen to have the governor's daughter was with me at school, and she had assigned police officers that were guarding our school.
We've said before that, you know, given the increasing temperature, it is surprising that we haven't had more of this than we have. And that's not to say there's been zero. You know, there were plenty of attempts. We had the two Donald Trump assassination attempts. We had the softball game shooting where Scalise was shot. We had Gabby Gifford. We've had plenty. Well, we had January 6th. We've had plenty of situations.
No, but that was a tour. What are you even talking about?
That was completely peaceful. You know, we've had a bunch of these events, but like, I may be forgetting some, but there may have been one other fatality.
The governor of Michigan plot.
Oh, yeah. The governor of Michigan plot where they were going to kidnap her. But this is the first fatality in a while, you know, with this kind of violence. But the thing is that's important here is it does look like, once again, this is like a lone wolf type guy who is just, you know, but that's how this works.
A liberal, right? He was a flaming liberal, right?
Oh, he's a famous
Antifa.
Obviously. No, he was not. But like, this is the thing with when you're raising the temperature like this, and they call it stochastic violence. you know, stochastic terrorism, et cetera. It is not some like organized group that's, you know, it, I mean, look, they're all, there are these militias and the 3%ers and the Proud Boys and all these folks, but those are, yeah. And those do have their own risks associated with them and things they could do. But the greatest danger and the hardest to combat is just random people who get radicalized and go decide they're going to do something. And this guy had, you know, he ended up, you know, killing two people, the ex-Speaker of the House and her husband, and injuring two more lawmakers that are, no, one more lawmaker and his wife who are going to survive. Also killed the dog of the one he killed as well, by the way.
So Christy Noem was not involved here?
Christy Noem was not involved. But, you know, he had a list of several dozen people.
Yeah, I know.
She
had a list
people.
Of fucking a lot of people.
And there were people not just in that state, too. This was in Minnesota. He had a whole bunch of Minnesota lawmakers. He had a whole bunch of Minnesota Minnesota pro-choice activists who weren't lawmakers also on the list. And then a bunch of lawmakers from outside of Minnesota from neighboring states as well. You know, so, you know, he had a big long list. And apparently, before he was caught, he went to two more houses from people on his hit list.
They weren't home, thank God.
They weren't home, you know, or this would have been more.
So this is a good advocacy for socialize and get the hell out of the house more often. Might save your life. You got some asshole trying to kill you.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. It's
by the way, as my recommendation to you, okay, I don't know about you guys, and my wife gets on me, but number one, okay, you guys have a doorbell. You don't open the fucking door for, you know, you don't know who the fuck it is. Okay,
we got more fundamental issues with that, right? Like,
you should have the door locked.
Yes, the door should be locked. We should
all the doors need to be locked. The argument that I get with my wife, you know, no, she now does it. But the arguments that I got, listen, you need to have your doors locked. You know,
yeah. Look. I mean, conversations are beginning about upgrading security. You know, and because of this shit.
Yes,
you know, not that we have a specific threat right now, but because...
But you guys have received threats already that guys have had investigated.
Yes. They're,
okay.
Look, the bottom line is any public figure gets stuff all the time. You know, there was one situation that was actually credible enough that was investigated and discussed. But like, you know, it didn't turn out to be anything, but... Like any public figure, potentially this kind of stuff could happen. But my wife is an elected representative. All it takes is some crazy. Right now, like, you know, addresses and stuff are public record. Like, you know, this, you know, where we live is not a secret if somebody wants to find it out.
Except apparently if you're an ICE agent right now, which apparently you can go around completely without any identification, not identify yourself whatsoever, and grab a random person off the street without producing any paperwork to back up why you're grabbing them off the street. Now, that apparently is okay. I don't know if you've noticed. That apparently is fine. Okay? You know, but your information is public. Listen,
yeah, no.
You need to have a security system that works.
Oh, well, look, we're talking
cameras
about
that works. You need to make sure your doors are locking.
Yeah,
on a regular basis. Look,
conversations.
I'm giving you the drill because I have lived through this kind of shit. Unfortunately, okay, you know, because we've been robbed. We have had people come in. We have had people put guns to. It's, you know, so I have dealt with that, which is why I, at this age, am still. And my wife's, well, we live in Boca. Listen, I don't fucking care. All right? All it takes is one lunatic. Okay? All right?
Yeah.
And
we are having conversations about new doors, new alarm systems. Like you said, more more and better camera systems that are installed in such a, like, you know, I've got a little portable ones that I can move around and blah, blah, blah. As my wife pointed out, someone can just snip the cord, unplug them.
Yes.
You know, you want one that's installed in such a way that it's built in and you can't do that. Right. You know, all of this kind of stuff, you know, look, same thing. We're like, you know, it's a fairly decent neighborhood. And yeah, we had something stolen once in 12 years. We had something stolen. But, you know, but yeah, it's a decent neighborhood. It's a whatever, blah, blah, blah. But all it takes, like you said, one person, especially if they're targeting people.
Exactly.
Like it's one thing where it's like you want to deter sort of the casual thief who's wandering by and looking for the more vulnerable place, whatever. It's a completely different problem
but it's
if you're worried about somebody that might be targeting.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so, like, they're personal conversations we're having in the family. But like I said, I am 100% guaranteeing you all 50 state legislatures and probably the Congress as well are reassessing what they are doing for security and deciding, is it enough or do we have to beef it up? Because this one event happened. You mentioned the one that happened where they tried to kidnap the governor, and you know, they did take over the state capitol in that situation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this is being reassessed everywhere because the threat level is increasing. Because the tension levels are increasing, because the animosity between the sides here is increasing as well. And because, you know, I mean, bringing up the protests and bringing in the National Guard to California and all of this kind of stuff, same thing. It's like you are taking the already vast divisions in this country and you are driving the sides further apart as we go, not bringing them back together. And it becomes harder for both sides to imagine reconciling this gap.
Not anytime soon.
Not anytime soon. And so.
No.
Okay, well, that was fun.
Yay!
Shall we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Okay, curmudgeons-corner.com. Go see the stuff. We've got the archives, we've got transcripts, we've got links to all the ways to contact us, and of course we've got the Patreon where you can give us money at various levels. We'll send you a postcard, we'll send you a mug, we'll mention you on the show, all that kind of stuff. I know I still owe postcards and mugs to people. Yeah. Ed did get his mug, but I owe two postcards and a mug, and I will eventually get to it. You know, I've owed these things for months. Well, the new mug is for Todd, who was just on a couple weeks ago, but I've owed these postcards for like months and months and months now. Eventually you will get your postcards, but importantly at $2 a month or more on the Patreon, or if you just ask us, we will invite you to Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and a whole bunch of listeners are chatting and sharing links throughout the week. So, Yvonne, what's a highlight from this week's Curmudgeon's Corner Slack that we have not talked about on the show?
The most important news of the week, which we did not cover here.
Yes, yes.
And we need to make sure that our listeners and viewers are well informed, because this could be an opportunity to save money for you. As the Trump Organization announces a mobile plan with a $499 smartphone. The Trump Organization unveiled a mobile phone plan and a $499 smartphone that is set to launch later this year. The new venture is an example of Donald Trump's business empire capitalizing association with a sitting president. Apparently, you can get the new service from Trump Mobile. Will offer a $47.45 per month plan that includes unlimited talk and data, as well as roadside assistance and a telehealth and pharmacy benefit, Sam, according to its website. The company, owned by President Donald Trump, also announced that it will sell a T1 smartphone, which appears to feature a
gold-colored metal case etched with an American flag, Sam. I mean...
But Yvonne, the most critical thing, right? This yep. phone is 100% made in America, right?
Oh, no.
Because we have
said they will get there at some point.
But we have all these Americans clamoring to build phones.
Yeah, because they say, hey, our made in the USA T1 phone is available pre-order now. The reality is that, as usual with them, they say that, and this is like pre-ordering a Tesla semi-truck.
Mm.
You may wait that long.
How long just is that like one those been now?
7 or 8 years we've been waiting for this Tesla semi.
They do say made in America, Yvonne? It will be.
They say that they will eventually make it. So there was an interview with, I think, one of the Trump moron kids. I don't know, whichever. One of those idiots, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're fungible in my view. Anyway, one of them, and they asked him about, hey, so is the phone made in America? Well, not yet, but eventually, Sam.
Eventually. Yeah. Okay.
So are we pre-ordering our T1 phone?
How can you not?
I mean, you know, so it's $500. That's such a waste, because I would like to get one and take like a sledgehammer and just beat it to pieces and like tape, you know, record that video.
See, here's the thing, though. You do that. You've still paid them the $500. You've still paid them. So you have to, if you're going to do something like that.
That have some kind of like a repair breakage warranty, maybe, where I could get my money.
No, it's, well, maybe. No, you have to have some way where you get it from somebody who paid for it, but you don't, or something.
Right.
Or
I find a used one on eBay for like 10 cents after somebody. Ah, yeah, because look. Somebody will buy it. They'll realize what a piece of shit. They'll put it up for sale at 10 cents on the dollar, if that. Okay. And then we take that one and smash it.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. You have to arrange the whole scenario.
So it doesn't cost me money.
It's not that it doesn't cost you money. The important part is you're not giving them money.
Right. So they don't get money. We need to get a phone without us having to pay for it, but not committing something illegal.
Oh, that puts constraints. Yeah. Like, yeah, I was thinking, you know, stealing, but you know, you're right. We should not commit felonies.
Some kind of trial. I say, hey, guys, listen, we are a podcast. We're extremely conservative podcast. and you know, we want to review this phone for our audience. So you can send us a free sample.
Yes, that's it. Yes. Okay, you get right on that, Yvonne.
There you go. Say, yeah, we are an ultra-right-wing podcast. We are all in on Trump. We are on the Trump train. We'll drive the Trump train. Just send us a free phone.
Okay, Yvonne.
This is how they operate. I don't know if you think you realize this, right? That this is exactly... I mean, I just felt slimy saying that, but I realize that that's the way they work.
Right, because... Yes. If your bottom line, like Donald Trump, is do whatever... makes me money, makes me a winner, and it doesn't matter what that thing is.
Right.
Then if you can identify, hey, it would be more lucrative to become a conservative influencer than a liberal influencer, then you just do it.
Yes.
Because like what you say doesn't matter. It's just instrumental to get what you want.
There is a car guy that does car YouTube that has been very successful the last 5 or 6 years, 7 years. And some people are trying to dig into his background and realize that, and he admitted, and he didn't want to talk about it because he's ashamed of it, that for a period of time, that's exactly what he was doing online. he was some kind of conservative troll, and there was some way that he was harvesting clicks, and harvesting those clicks made him money by just posting rage bait and whatever, whatnot, and getting the interactions, and that made him money, and he did that. But it was very clear that it was brought up, and somebody said, and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I did that, and I don't want to talk about that. Because you could tell he was ashamed of having done that. But it was at a point where I think he admitted he was broke. And it was like, oh, look, I could make money out of this. Great. You know, I could make a living. And so he was doing that. But then, yeah, he realized it, you know, like I am, you know, I have more scruples than that. I don't care how fucked up broke I am. I'm not going to stoop to that level. Of that, I could do quite a lot of other things that could earn me a wage that don't stoop to being a basically a scumbag.
But Yvonne, look, the bottom line here is there are a lot of dumb people out there, and the best way to make money is figure out how to separate them from their money in one way or another.
P.T. Barnum.
It's P.T. Barnum was close to that statement. I think you're right. That was probably him separating a fool from their money or whatever. And just in general, fraud is extremely lucrative so long as you don't get caught.
That's a way.
No.
Even if you get caught, what you got to do is make a hefty donation to Donald J. Trump Super PAC and make sure it's a federal crime and.
I was about to say, effectively, Donald Trump's administration has legalized white collar crime.
Yes.
Because they are not prosecuting it. They are not investigating it. If you do get caught, he'll pardon you for the right donation. Menendez went to jail this week. It's a miracle he's not pardoned yet. I guess he just hasn't given the right donation.
Yeah, I'm like wondering.
Doesn't he have any of those gold bars left? Come on.
Come on. Yeah. I mean, I am shocked still to this moment that Menendez has not been pardoned. Anyway, we digress. We were trying to end the show.
End the show. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great week. Stay safe. Blah, 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 blah. We just had Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth.
Juneteenth. Unless you're Donald Trump, who said, I don't know, something just...
There are too many holidays that go, people go don't fucking work. People bitches. Need to work more. I didn't get the day off.
I did. My company gave the day off.
I am jealous.
Yeah.
But apparently we have too many days off. We should all be working more. Be grateful for what we get, you know. So, anyway, okay. Did I say goodbye? Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
You know, a few times lately when I've seen headlines about Bannon, I've misread it and thought they were talking about Barron.
Oh, well, yeah.
Now, Barron Trump is turning into quite the scumbag himself as he grows up, apparently. But, you know, I guess he has been indoctrinated,
you know, from an early age. So, unfortunately, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But, you know, oh, well, Barron, Bannon, same damn thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. See you later, Yvonne. Goodbye.
Bye.